9 o'clock on the East Coast. It's Monday night, and that means it's another time for another edition of the Cool Down Lap. This is the podcast of Midwest Motorsports, and tonight's guest is the Daytona Opening Week winner from the Truck Series, the driver of the number 73, Aaron Holroyd. And we're going into second week with a new segment of the show on Monday nights. James Johnson, the voice of Midwest Motorsports, he'll be doing a weekly road series roundup, going in-depth to the road series and filling everybody in on all the highlights of the race, as well as his take on that race. And we'll also be doing, of course, updates on all the races and points for all four series. And looking forward to what's coming up on the next week. Just want to let you know that the Cool Down Lap can be seen live right now on Twitch, later on uploaded to YouTube, audio and video also on Spotify, after 5 hours of working with them to get the audio and video back up instead of just the audio. We're back in business there, and you can also catch it on YouTube. We're now on TuneIn, and in January we will be on Sirius XM as well. All our podcasts will be there. So let's introduce our guest for tonight, Aaron Holroyd, driver of the number 73, the opening week winner of Daytona. Good evening, Aaron. How you doing?
Great. How you doing?
Not too bad. So what was your take on the Daytona race there? How long were you up front, and did you expect to win? And what different strategies did you use to make that happen?
Well, you know, after the duels, I started back there in 24th, because I think right when I got in the last lap, I got a 20X, so it kind of pushed me on the other end of the field. I think I started 24th, and, you know, you have strategies going into the race, what you think you're going to do, and I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to hang on the back, let the front guys do a thing, just stay within the draft and see what happens there. And within, I don't know, it was like 500 yards, we had our first caution. Next thing I know, I'm up in 13th. I'm like, okay, then. So that strategy's out the window, because I'm front to mid-pack, so I'll hang out here. Had some good hopes. I'm like, okay, you'll just hang out here and try to avoid all the big things, and got stuck with some, I think I got stuck in most of the accidents. Most of them are just kind of brushes, so trying to do minimal damage and not hit walls. If I can bounce off a car or two and keep it straight, that was the big goal.
Was that your strategy going into the race before qualifying? Or did the fact that you started in the back have anything to do with that?
No, starting in the back was just like, okay, I'm going to hang out here and just try to get least amount of incident points and see where I fare up after everybody else has their little incidents, because it's opening race. We have, I don't know, 10 or 15 newer people in the series, so it's bound to get a little crazy, and people are used to running in a draft of 34 trucks, let alone
a lot of 20. Trucks. That's a lot, because I do the commentating on Friday nights. I wasn't there that night. I'd gone out hiking that day, and my back was killing me, so I wasn't there. But we also had a good turnout for trucks this past Friday night. And so how does it change your, when you see 34 trucks there, you said you hang out in the back. Let's say you get like three quarters through the race and you haven't had a chance to make a run. Do you just resign yourself to finishing the back, or do you do like I do, start getting desperate and you say, I'm a better driver than this, so I'm really going to crank it up and get aggressive?
It really turns into like, well, where we're at with the strategies, whatnot, if you're going to take tires or not. You know, Daytona, I don't think I took any tires the entire time, because it's, for the most part, I would take my gas. I'm like, oh, I'm still at 98% within the first stage. Wow. I'm like, I'm still rolling pretty good here. And it's just finding the certain trucks you know you can run around, like, for sure, because I've raced with them before. I'm like, okay, you know, these guys in front of me aren't going to do anything bad if they're going to check up and watch my mirrors and kind of hang out. And then when it starts to get desperate time, I'm like, fortunately for me, I wasn't in too much of a desperate time, because I ended up somewhere within the top 10 for the last half of the race, I believe.
Good for you.
And I kind of just hung out with guys I knew, like, I know Skimia, raced them before, and there's other guys that were up there. Sad to see Dustin fall back where he did, but he got caught up in some other messes. It's just about knowing who you're around and
Right.
who you can bump with and who you can start trusting. And Sean Cunningham was there, and he was one of the new guys. And man, that guy would give me some. He would give me shots at the right time, and he'd hit me square in the back. I'm like, you know what? This is a
Awesome.
guy I know I can run with now, and
Yep.
he's another guy you can add into that group of I can run with this guy, and I also owe him one.
Those are just some good points. How do you handle it when there's new drivers and you're not sure if somebody's going to be able to bump you or be able to handle a bump from you, but they keep wanting to get in your draft, either in front of you or back of you? Do you try to avoid them? What's your escape route there?
If I see somebody I don't know behind me coming up to me, I'm just gonna hold a little bit tighter and make sure I keep those arms stiff. That way, I don't lose too much of the wiggle with them.
Gotcha.
As if they're in front of me, I'll kind of make sure I watch them for a little bit, like a lap or two, and see how they're running the turns and their lines, and make sure they're not wiggling too much. If they're kind of holding a good consistent line, I'm like, okay, I can give him a shot. Don't give him a 5 or 10 mile an hour shot. Give him a little tap to kind of
Sure.
give him a little boost and see how he handles that first and work with that.
Now, the backstretch is a great place for drafting. Do you do any drafting on the front stretch or going through the dog leg, which can be dangerous, but I've seen it done before.
I try not to hit people in the dog leg because I don't know how they react to him unless it. You older guys, sure. The newer guys, I'm not too keen on doing that.
Right.
I know I was a little nervous when I was getting ready to get one from Sean, and he gave me a good one. But like I said, I mean, he hit me flush in the back, and it just sent me forward. I'm like, that's the kind of push I need right there. And I was like, okay, I can handle some people better.
Now, during the race, are you involved with a team or do you chat with anybody on the race to plan strategies and like I do in some of our teams, because I'm on a was in some other leagues and my team, Joe Sixpack Racing, very wide gap between a normal driver like myself and somebody that is like a pro and then the new guy, which can help out when you're all spread out on the track, because you can like advise each other of where the wrecks are and such like that. Have you done anything like that?
I used to have some team members, but they've all had kids and have not raced in a while, so I'm kind of running the solo truck at the moment. So when it comes to talking to others, it's not really there. Kind of just finding out where I'm at and who I'm racing around, and who I can bump with and who I can, if certain people are like, hey, they're pitting, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go with them because I know them. I'm gonna pit with them at the same time.
Right, so you got to be more aware of your surroundings and seeing who's pitting when you don't have anybody to talk to. At least that's what I found.
Yes.
So what are your plans going forward for the rest of the season in the truck series? Where do you hope to end up?
Honestly, if with this many people, if I can get somewhere in the top 10, that'd be fantastic. I know I was off to a good start with winning Daytona. I was like, I looked up and I'm like, holy cow, we got 2 laps left and I'm in third place. I'm like, this is literally the position I want to be in. Don't want to be
Exactly.
in the front, but I'm right behind the inside guy. I can give him shots and hopefully clear that second car or second truck and move up. And luckily, I got that door open. I kind of got pushed with a little bit of wiggle, so I kind of forced myself up there and just hung it out there and kept it wide open.
Gotcha. So I know why I don't like to lead. There's been times on some of the free open lobbies on iRacing, let's say trucks, specifically trucks at Phoenix, I tend to do fairly well at. But I don't like leading that much. I mean, a couple laps here and there, but unless you're going to have a big gap between you and P2, if you've got someone on your bumper the whole time and you got to watch out for lap traffic, you're kind of driving through the rear view mirror and the front as well. Is that the reason why you wouldn't want to be up front with 3 laps to go?
Off the restarts, you kind of have a little bit better time because you're not gonna have that lap traffic to worry about. But like you said, when you have to do the front and the back, and some people are really good at that, and I'll let them do that, and I'll just hang out with them, and then hopefully make my chance and take my shot when I need it.
When did you take your shot? Was it something that you did, or did you wait for P1 and P2 to make a mistake and then take advantage of it?
I believe it was off the restart. We came out of turn 2, and I had cleared P2, and I don't know if I got a... I think I got a push, and it kind of pushed me up the track a little bit. I'm like, well, you know what? This P2 guy is going to be... The guy that was in second started to get a good run. I'm like, I'm going to dive up in front of him. And I'm like, and then I'm just going to hold an exit Skimmia, because I know he's going to hold his line and he's not going to be doing anything. He was good at holding his position.
And yeah,
I know
the
line that he runs. He's going to hang it exactly where he needs to. He's going to ride that yellow line the entire time, and I'm just going to hang out here and we'll go side by side and see who gets the better run. And fortunately, Daytona top line usually gets the better run if you have enough people. Mm-hmm. And he got caught out, I think it was the 81. He had hit like the apron and came up and got into the back of Skimmia and got him loose, and then at that point I had two of the trucks behind me, and Skimmia was kind of lost by himself. I'm like, well, just going to hold it straight and people are going to try to go around me. That's what they're going to do, because last time I tried to block people, it didn't work very well for me. So I'm just like, I'm going to hold my line, and then mm-hmm. people can go around me if they can get there. Good for them.
So when did you make your move and realize that you had the win?
I didn't realize I had the win until I came out of 4 and saw Skimmia turning down to the right. I'm like, holy cow. And I just saw two of the trucks behind me, and neither one of them pulled out, and they just stayed by on my line. I'm like, I started like, holy crap, I'm going to win this race. And I looked at my wife, she goes, no. I'm like, I have this win. She goes, you do not. I'm like, I do too.
Oh, so you had someone right there watching you.
Yeah, my wife sits about 5 feet from me, and she was over there eating her. He should eat her food and watching the whole time. She goes, "Are you kidding me?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm not kidding you. I just actually won a race."
Now I know if my wife were watching me and there were 10 laps to go and I was leading by half a car length, she goes, "You got the win. It's all yours." How does your wife? Does she egg you on, cheer you on, and how does that affect you while you know you got somebody watching, as well as you got to watch what's in front of you and behind you and your wife on the side?
Oh no, she just sits there and watches and says, she's like, "You're good." I'm like, she goes, "Where are you at?" I'm like, 5 laps to go. She's like, "All right, good luck." And I'm like, that's all I need to do here, because sometimes I have my son down here and he'll be like sitting right over my shoulder. I'm like, "You need to go somewhere else, please. I can't be having you right on my shoulder and watching me. This is not going to happen. It's not going to end well."
Yeah, I could be racing something like that, and my wife would see like a truck that's got a nice paint scheme, and she would literally, that's why I don't let her down here in the man cave where I race, because she would literally say, oh, I want to see that truck again. That's a pretty looking truck. And she would, but she's good cheerleader, but overly aggressive on the cheering and more interested in somebody else's paint scheme than the fact that I could win a race, which doesn't happen often.
Exactly.
So tell me a little bit about racing history. Let's go back all the way to the beginning. How old were you when you first got interested in racing, and what was it that got you interested?
Oh, man. I had to be somewhere in the early years. I mean, like 7 to 8. I'd watch with my dad every once in a while, and I got to the point where he would say either a driver's number, their name, or their sponsor, and I can name off the other two.
Oh, cool.
And he would use that as like, look what my kid can do with his friend. He'd be like, you know, he'd say Interstate Battery. I'd be like, oh, Bobby Labonte, 18. And he would just keep going. He goes, yeah, your kid knows every driver in the NASCAR field.
Ah, cool.
That was, you know, back in the 90s, and I kind of just kept up watching it then, back when, mm-hmm. you know, it was almost free to watch everywhere.
Yeah.
Now you got to have certain subscriptions to watch certain races, and now for the most part, I just catch them on the old YouTube after the race is over.
Yeah, same thing here. We've got DirecTV, and the local Fox affiliate, of course, is banned from DirecTV because DirecTV doesn't want to pay the money for the
That's
viewership.
A shame.
So, and very seldom can I get it on our antenna. We're close enough where we can pick it up with the antenna, but because of the terrain and stuff, we can't get it. So yeah, I kind of feel what you're talking about there. And if once NBC picks up, if you don't have USA Network, hopefully they won't get banned, then you can't watch the rest of the season. So same thing. So iRacing, when did you start that?
Started it, I'd say it was August of last year was when I got my got, you know, my three screens and got my steering wheel, which at the time was screwed and drilled into my desk.
Yep.
Did all this stuff to the starting out phases of, you know,
right.
This is what I want to try doing. It sounds fun. And then it's evolved from there.
What other leagues you do, or actually, let's jump back. What was the first league you got into, or the first, let's go back, first series that you ran, either the officials or a league, and how did you pick it?
I didn't run any series. At the point of when you start up iRacing, you know, you kind of get lost in, oh, I want to do this, I want to do this. And I started doing dirt circles. I was in dirt rally cars, and I was doing
yep.
the GT4s, and then I was wanted to do these and this, and I kind of kept jumping around. I'm like, this is not, I'm like, because I would, you'd have to buy all these tracks. I'm like, I need to find a series
mm-hmm.
that I could just buy, like, tracks that work for everything. And I'm like, well, let's do the NASCAR ones. That sounds fun. I'll just do the truck things. And
mm-hmm.
I just done, like, just the fun races in the open lobbies. And then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna look for, like, leagues. I joined the iRacing Discord and saw one of these two guys post in there that they're looking for league drivers. I'm like, shoot, let's go with this one. I'm like, this is the first league I've joined, and you know, their league racing fits right in with my schedule, so I'm just gonna cool. go ahead and run with these guys, and don't have anyone else want to run with, don't need to go anywhere else. I have all my racing here. You get your road racing on Tuesdays, and you have your three NASCAR ones on the weekends.
Great answer.
So how many of the series do you run?
Right now I'm just doing the road and the trucks. Mm-hmm. My schedule kind of got wonked up, so there's times where I can get out of work at 6:30. So can't really run Saturdays, and Sundays would be kind of close. I maybe can make some Sundays, but I'm like, you know what? I can for sure make Tuesday races, and I'll always make the Friday races because there's nothing I'm doing at 9:30 at night on a Friday besides racing.
Yeah, I used to do other things on 9:30 of Friday nights, but then all the nightclubs closed down. I got married and had four kids, so that kind of precluded that, but that's a long time ago. So now I come down here, have a couple beers, and talk racing with James for a couple hours, and it's much better than going out. So if you get out at 6:30 and you can get home in time for 7 to catch a race occasionally, you must live pretty close to work.
Yeah, my work's give or take 15-20 minutes if there's traffic, and
oh, lucky you.
You know, if I gotta get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to work, so I don't want to drive far.
I don't blame you. I did talk radio for 6 years, and I was getting up at 4 a.m. to be on the air by 7, because it was 45 miles down to the station, and it was even more ridiculous when it was snow on the ground. But my day job for the last 30 years before I retired was a 90-minute commute, so. Good for you for living close to work.
That's a hard pass for that drive. Thank you.
I love road trips, but not a road trip going to work. To me, a good road trip's going to down south to watch a race, or up to Loudon to photograph motorcycle races with my kid. So I take it you don't miss the open lobbies on iRacing too much, or do you still jump down and do them occasionally?
If I'm feeling like I want to, like, I just jumped down there a little bit ago to get my A license. I'm like, I want to have my A oval. Like, I want to do that. Oh, cool. Get my A oval,
mm-hmm.
count it for there. And I'd like to get a B or A oval for, not an oval, an A or B license for the road. But for the most part, I'm not too open for getting the open lobbies. It's just too many people you don't know. And it's just either you can have one race where you get plus 10 and you can have a race where you lose 30. I'm like, nope, we're good.
Exactly. My goal a couple of years ago was to get up to I rating of 1500, which would have been great. I would have been happy with that. But every time I'd get like to 1478, and even one time 1498, and then in two or three races, not even on a weekend, just during the week, you'd get clobbered and you'd lose 200 points. I'm like, you know what? I'm done with this. I don't care. So I do mostly mostly league racing, but I'll jump down and do like the pickup cup or carburetor cup. Do you like oval or road better, and why?
Oh man, that's like a night and day question. It's I like the ovals. That's just from the background of watching everything growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to get into roads. There's certain road, like, I know it's hard to figure it out, but I would love to do, if there's a there's a left side drive for the supercars, I would be down for that all the time. But those Aussie guys driving the right side, those I cannot. I've tried so hard to wrap my head around driving on the right side of this car, and it's just nearly impossible for me. So if they had road racing with the supercars with the left side drive, I would be down for that every single day of the week. But until then, I'm just going to keep doing my trucks with you guys.
Yeah, I actually prefer road. Maybe it's because I don't do it that often. I don't know. There's just something cool about getting in the GT cars or an open wheel and, like, you know, Laguna Seca or a track like that, which is I find pretty easy to drive on an open wheel and just, you know, pretend you're on some F1 team making $60 million a year with all the beautiful women and stuff like that around you, you know. But then the harsh realities put that to bed pretty quick. So,
I'm interested to see what happens with the next road series.
Yeah. So, coming up this weekend for Kentucky, what's your thoughts on that track? Is it a high confidence track or a little bit of a skepticism like I do? Because it looks easy, but it's not a very easy. It's a tricky track to drive, and it likes to eat tires.
I'm going to have to get back to you on that because unless it's the race week, I usually don't hop on the race until maybe an hour before. Do like a little hour practice myself and then kind of figure it out there. And I know it's not a super speedway, so you can't just
right
mash down the whole time. So got to figure out some lines. And luckily for me, there's the old YouTube, so I could just Google. Or not, you can YouTube how to drive a certain track with a certain truck on fixed settings. That kind of helps me a lot with the other stuff.
Oh, have you ever checked out Virtual Racing School?
I have not checked out Virtual Racing School.
It's pretty good. I keep forgetting I have it. And then you can do a lot with that. You can download all the telemetry and such like that. And you can even get in with group training or solo training, or you just run the track and the track of the week on the different series, and it's usually in the ovals or trucks. It's usually a NASCAR guy if it's a NASCAR race, and they give you certain secrets. They're not going to give up everything, of course. And if it's not a NASCAR drive, it's one of the top iRacing drivers. And it's been a while since I've done it, but you can like ride around the car with them, and they'll show you where all the braking points are and such like that. As far as going to YouTube, how do you figure out who you can trust with their advice and who's a scammer, like giving out bad advice but thinking they know it?
There's a couple of people I watch. There's two or three of them, and I'll watch all three of them to see what they think each section is. And for the most part, like between the three of those guys, they all generally have the same like line or how you take this certain turns. Road racing is a little bit different, right? Because they all have like, oh, you if you let up here, you can do get out faster here. But
sure.
when I go to the oval ones, for the most part, they all have like the same general lines. And they're like, you know, if you're running this much fuel, then you're going on, you know, this is when you want to pit, and this is how you're going to enter a turn and exit a turn the fastest. And between that and then going into the actual practice lobby and then looking some inside the camp, the cockpit footage from other racers, I can see what they're doing to get them, you know, a couple of tenths faster.
Cool. How do you like your steering when you're driving and your force feedback and such like that? Tight, loose?
I would like it to be a little bit more tighter, but I'm running a Logitech right now, so, you know, it's not belt driven. It's the old gear thing, so it can kind of get clunky. And then when they were talking about it, they talked about it after the race, about bumping your offset. Because I used to run like 10 to 1, and I found that like I would get more wiggle. So I put up to, I'm like, you know, let's just try 16 to 1. And I was like, I can actually hold a line a lot better here now. But I'm like, because you're in a draft with a lot more people, so you're going to have more free weight in the truck. And I'm like, oh, this is a lot easier to drive these things. If I'm 16 or 1, I'm like, but, you know, when there's tracks where you have to brake and actually turn a little bit more, you know, I'll probably bump it back down to 12 and see how that works for a couple laps.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that because I found, like, on the bumpy tracks, if the higher ratio, it, you get a lot of, I find you get more wiggle in your wheel like that, and it's kind of harder to control it because it's a little more twitchy when you're turning. But
yeah,
I've tried loosening the wheel up a little bit because I know it can save tires. A couple teammates were trying to work with me on that, and it, to me, it just feels like it's too much effort if you've got to get out of the way of a wreck. If your steering is too loose, it takes too long to get out of the way. I'd rather have it twitchy, be able to avoid a wreck, than be too loose and not be able to do it. But that's my take. How about brake bias? Do you play around with that at all?
Not particularly with like speedways. I will mess around with it more when like for Kentucky and other ones, like especially Bristol and, you know, Dover and those ones. I'll mess with those and kind of put them more in the front end than the rear end, depending on how much I want to turn. You know, if Bristol's getting a little tight, then I'll put some more in the rear end to kind of help that car get a little turn, or truck, I should say.
Yeah. Now, as you're going through the race, do you ever adjust your brake bias? Because I know a lot of drivers that in some of the other leagues recommended like a setting to start with, and as the run goes on, you either loosen it up or tighten it somewhat.
Yeah, it depends on how far we're in on the stint with the certain tires. You know, if the tires are getting a little older, I'll change them up a little bit, and when it goes back to fresher tires, I'll bring the bias back to where I wanted it to go and kind of just work with there.
Cool. Any other secrets you want to give up for the rest of the season?
I might not be running a Manscaped truck all season. I did make one recently because of my newly inspired fashion wear. So we'll see that coming out some of the southern tracks.
And what's that new inspired fashion wear?
The old denim and cowboy boots. I got a boot barn truck coming out.
Oh, cool. Nothing wrong with denim and cowboy boots. I'm in a part of New York where I could wear that. We're up in the sticks. I wouldn't dare go to the city or Albany like that, but around here, I think it's pretty cool. Matter of fact, a lot of the farmers do dress like that around here, so it's kind of cool. Any other thing you want to pass on to anybody listening before we end the segment here?
I know both Justin and Eric know that this is a pretty good league, and they've got a lot of things wrapped around, and I don't think there's too much wiggle room. They do a really good job at keeping everybody fair and straight, even if you're down a couple laps and still make a boo-boo, you're still going to get in trouble for it. So, you know, you could be a top runner or a back runner.
Yep.
You do something bad, they're going to get you for it. So it's fair, and I don't see favoritism towards anybody, so it's nice to have that bias racing, and the new guys are racing. It's a good series to stay with, so you don't need to go anywhere else. We're good here.
Cool. Aaron Holleride, winner of week one at Daytona, thanks for stopping by to our weekly feature, the Cool Down Lap Driver Spotlight. Congratulations on your win, and good luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks, Rick. See you out there.
Okay, have a good one. It's Aaron Holleride, everybody. Now let's go check out what's going on in the Road Series with the voice of Midwest Motorsports and my partner in the broadcast booth on Friday Night Truck Series, James Johnson. How you doing, James?
Hey, Greg. Good evening. I'm great. How are you?
I am doing well. So 34 trucks in the first race and 34 on the other race. We're going to have to clone ourselves here to try to keep up with all these trucks on the track, but I think we did a pretty good job Friday night.
Oh man, it was a great pleasure having you in the booth, Greg.
I appreciate that.
Thanks for joining me. The door is always open for you. Yeah, I think it's going to get a little tricky when we get to some of the short track, maybe Martinsville or Bristol, 34 trucks on that.
Yep.
Race control is going to have to be on their toes. Barney's going to keep the flag handy, let's put it that way.
That's for sure. So this is James Johnson with the weekly Road Series update. Take it away, James.
Hey, no worries, Greg. Well, first of all, we missed you last week, so I have two races to update everybody about. First of all, race six was at Suzuka, and man, what a great, amazing race. We had Josh Bloom put it on the pole, and it was an evening race. So it was really neat seeing the different colors in the sky. And as the race progressed, the lights became more and more obvious that they were working. So that part was really cool. So yeah, it started off with Josh Bloom on the pole, Johan de Roy, Max Bauer, going into, I think it was turn three, Shay McNeely actually had a net code. We reviewed it and looked at it and zoomed in. We did an instant replay, everything. It was definitely no contact, but Shay McNeely ended up in the grass. So a tough break for him. He's been a front runner all season. Ended up in the grass, ended up turning fast lap of the race. So he hung in there. Josh Bloom, I think when it came down to a couple of laps before the pit stops, Bloom came in first and spent a little longer in the pits than expected. And Johan de Roy and Max Bauer stayed out and until they were almost all the way empty. Johan de Roy was in front with Max Bauer, nose to tail, less than a tenth of a second between them. They were just cranking out lap after lap. Really good racing. And apparently they're teammates that I found out after the race. So they may have been on comms with each other and just cranking out the laps. But Johan de Roy ended up coming in, and he thought Max was going to follow him. But Max Bauer stayed out, went one more lap. They both changed front tires while they were in, but Max Bauer ended up coming out ahead. So the overcut turned out to be the winning move. So Max Bauer with the win, Johan de Roy second, Josh Bloom the pole sitter got third, and Shay McNeely did get an extra 10 points for the fastest race lap. So it was kind of cool the way that all worked out. Jason Phillips was in the mix. It was good to see Justin Fedorowski. He got a top five at the end of the race too, and that's all in the pros. A couple of guys spun. A couple of guys got penalties. I'm not going to mention any names. Don't want to put anybody on blast. But the racing continues to get cleaner and cleaner as the penalties go out and as the camaraderie builds and you start to see the racers learning each other. A lot like Aaron mentioned, knowing who you can race and who you can't race against. So hopefully the ones that have been over the incident points, the IPL review is coming up soon too. So that's pretty much a wrap up on the pro Suzuka. Now the AM Suzuka was another incredible close battle. It was great to see Sam Hubbard. He's running a Mercedes this season, and he and Michael O'Dell were going at it for the whole 60 minutes. Pretty amazing. David Wortman was in there. Christopher Hopper ended up with the top five as well. But Sam Hubbard with the win over Michael O'Dell by less than 2 seconds. Michael O'Dell had the fast lap in the AMs. Keith Harbolt had most position gained and got 5 bonus points for that. So that was Suzuka. It was exciting. Everybody was pretty motivated and ready to move on to the next race, Sebring. Another evening race that blended, started at dusk, blending towards the night. So in the pros, that's standings. 1 second. Where are my notes here? The AMs, where's the pros? All right, pro. And we're going to go to Sebring. Yes, there we go. All right. Jason Phillips. Thank you. Jason Phillips is the one who put it on the pole. Man, he had a fast lap. And so it was great to see him lead a few laps. And then, again, Johan de Roy and Max Bauer, class of the field. Josh Bloom was in there as well. Jason Phillips, after the pit stop, they were coming down last 15 or 20 minutes, I believe. And Jason Phillips got a slowdown, a 1 second slowdown. Apparently, iRacing didn't like his track limits. There's a couple, Sebring track very well, Greg. Pretty flat, not a lot of defined curves, easy to go off when you're trying to set up for the next apex. And they dinged him for a 1 second slowdown, and that cost Jason Phillips second place. So Johan de Roy ended up winning. Jason Phillips got second. Max Bauer third. Josh Bloom fourth. Another amazing, incredible battle in the AM class. We won't talk about too many wrecks. There were some crashes, a couple of spinners. Nothing super egregious. So I don't think anybody got reviewed. There may have been some incident submissions. So there might be a pit lane start next week. You know who you are. But as far as Sebring goes for the AMs, forgive me for being a little behind. There we go. Oh, yeah. Michael O'Dell and David Wortman were going at it. Michael O'Dell in the Porsche with the win. David Wortman ended up finishing second. Sam Hubbard, Suzuka winner, got third. Justin Glockner fourth. Adolfo Castillo with the pit lane start ended up getting fifth overall. So that was Sebring, which also finished to the dark. So real exciting road series. Anybody interested? Tuesday nights, 1 hour race, 20 minute practice, a 10 minute qualifying. So lots to play for. Right now, Sam Hubbard and David Wortman are less than 50 points apart. So it's only, you know, four positions apart with only eight races out of 20. So it's a pretty exciting season developing. On the pro side, Johan de Roy leads the points by 110 over Max Bauer, Jason Phillips in third, and Shay McNeely fourth. Again, this is without the drops. There are two drops by the end of the season. So kind of hard to tell exactly from here, but with eight races in and no drops, Johan de Roy and Max Bauer seem to be the class of the field. But I would not count Jason Phillips, Shay McNeely, even Justin Thaler's currently in the top five. I don't mean even Justin Thaler. I meant that in a good way. Justin Thaler is in there with a top five in the points right now. So anything can happen, especially with the drops as the season progresses. And that's pretty much a wrap for the road series. Tuesday nights are very exciting. I know I'm going to be Tuesday nights and Friday nights with you, Greg. But anybody interested in Tuesday nights, Midwest-Motorsports.com, where you can find all the info on how to sign up and get connected with the Discord and sign up for some road racing if you're ready for it.
What's your outlook for Lime Rock on the 24th for the road series?
Lime Rock is next. That's absolutely right. And it's the classic. So it's without the chicane.
Oh, that's so too easy.
Easy. You know, 23, 25 cars on the track.
Oh, I know.
I call Lime Rock the boring.
Yes.
So three or four rights, and then Big Bend is the one left-hander, but it's the elevation change. Mm-hmm. It's got a little jump in it, a couple places, and then the elevation kind of drops as you finish the lap as well. I think it's going to be a tricky pit in and a tricky pit out right in the middle of turn one as well. So,
oh, exactly.
That's what I'm going to look for this week, Tuesday night.
And tomorrow. Huge elevation change. I work over at Lime Rock for three of their big series every year, and I'll be over there Wednesday getting the chance to do the autocross track, which is in the infield right by the campgrounds. And then I'll be back over Saturday morning for our group's year-end meeting, and it's also MiataCon this weekend. Three different series of Mazda MX-5s and Miatas are going to be there all weekend racing, so that's going to be exciting. When you mention elevation change, when you're standing on the bridge and you just see them cars come around that final turn by the last chicane, which hardly ever gets used, or at least it doesn't with IMSA when I'm there. Yeah. And it's just incredible just to watch those cars go down that hill and try to catch the right apex just before you go down that final straightaway there. It's a great track. It's an hour from home, and I can't wait to get the drive autocross this week.
You know, and there's not a lot of runoff room to the left either.
So no.
If you miss it by just a little bit, you're in the fence. And,
yep.
You know, fast repairs are going to go quick. So, yeah, be on your toes. And it could be by somebody else's doing as well, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You can gain or lose a lot of time right there. So,
yep.
Trying to set up a pass, you know, 3 or 4 turns ahead of time. And, yeah, so that's what we're looking forward to tomorrow night. It's going to be
cool.
We don't throw cautions very often, mm-hmm. full course cautions. But I wouldn't be surprised if we have the track blocked or, you know, 8 or 10 cars are involved in a pileup and race control decides to reel them all back in. And that could throw some strategy in with tires and pit stops, depending on where you are in the lap and whether you can come in or not. So
yeah, and that's it's another.
We'll see what happens. It's pretty exciting.
A very difficult turn one. It goes right into the S's, and then it goes down what used to be called the No Name Straight, which is now the Paul Newman Straight. I think they just named it, which goes right up to the first chicane there. Okay, James, thanks a lot. Maybe I'll watch the race tomorrow night online, but definitely, if not, we'll catch you in the booth on Friday night.
Yeah, well, before I leave, Greg, I want to make sure that you know how much we appreciate you hosting the podcast with us and giving the Cool Down Lap an opportunity to talk about all the great, amazing racing that's going on at Midwest Motorsports. And it was a great interview with Aaron Holroyd. Been calling him for last season and this season as well, and it's good to see him get the win at Daytona, and great to hear his point of view tonight. So thanks for giving us the platform, Greg.
Oh, you're welcome. As I say, it's the guests and you guys that make the show. I just provide the platform and flap my jaws for a little bit if there's any dead air. So that was our new segment, which we're going to be doing every week. It's the weekly Road Series update with James Johnson, the voice of Midwest Motorsports. And you can catch him calling the road race tomorrow night at Lime Rock, one of my favorite places. And I said it's just an hour away. And then you can also catch myself and James Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern on the Truck Series. Speaking of the Truck Series, we're going to check out the Truck Series review this week at Auto Club. Eric Thaler, he was the winner, and I think he's still with us. Yep, there he is. So, Eric, congratulations on your win in the truck race Friday night. Seemed to be a decent amount of yellow flags, but once you got green racing there towards the end, that was quite an exciting finish.
Yeah, for sure it was, Greg. I'll be honest, moving into this one, I wasn't well prepared for it. I probably had maybe 15 minutes of practice before the server come on. So, I've never actually turned a lap in the truck at Auto Club. So,
oh, wow.
First stage, I was doing a lot of learning to figure out what I had to do to, to get some speed and whatnot. And, you know, once I hit that second stage, I felt a stride coming and those green flag laps at the end really, really helped me turn it up some.
So, not ever turning a lap there, did you have any expectations or did you have a strategy going in and did it change during the course of the race?
Honestly, my strategy going in was just to, I was going to be happy with the top 10. I wanted to make sure I was turning clean laps. Cause I was stuck in a hole from Daytona. On the IPL. So, you know, I wanted to work to get off of it, but, you know, it turned out to be a fairly decent clean race. Mm-hmm. You know, some would probably beg to differ, but, you know, from my standpoint, obviously it was fairly clean and, you know, I just, you know, wanted to learn really what those fast guys were doing up front. And try to figure that out while still trying to manage tires. Cause, you know,
James and I have done, probably like half a dozen truck races. And, the guy from down under, Meddings, he always seems like almost every race he's going to like charge from the back. And were you looking over your, yeah. Hello? Hello?
You're sometimes just a little choppy. You're a little choppy sometimes.
Oh, all right. Yeah, it said connection issue. How is it now? All right, I switched over. Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
All right, sorry about that. Yeah, it's had a connection issue. What I was saying, Meddings from Australia always seems to charge up at the end of the race if he's not already running up front. Were you looking over your shoulder for him at during the last few laps?
Yeah, he was definitely one I was worried about there, and I believe he was sitting third, fourth, you know, in a couple of those restarts there at the end, and you know, he was definitely one I was looking out for.
Yeah,
you know, it did turn out to be quite the shootout between Dustin Reinstedl and myself, and you know, I had some legs on him there the first couple of turns, and he come out of four, and I have no idea where he found that speed on the last lap coming to the checkered, I believe he was right at my rear quarter when I passed the start finish line, and it was a close ending, and you know, him and I had a pretty decent shootout there at the end, and
yeah, it was good.
You know, it was a fun race. Yeah.
What are your plans for Kentucky for this Friday night?
You know, Kentucky is a strategic track for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tire wear it can be pretty exponential. You know, in those first couple of stages, again, because you got to try to manage your sets and still have something for the end. So, you know, I'm going to go into it just with the mindset of just trying to keep it clean and you know, manage tire sets. You know, I'd love to get some stage points out of a couple of those stages and you know, be up there to contend for the win. But you know, I gotta play it. You gotta play it with some strategy and
yeah.
You know, again, kind of see what the fast competitors are doing and you know, how you can be different, right? Because that's pretty much how. That's how you come victorious at the end is doing something different than what
doing,
you know,
exactly.
The folks, behind you did.
Now, turn one. Do you find turn one to be somewhat of a late apex?
Yes. Yeah.
Got
Kentucky
it.
Is a very interesting track.
Yeah.
Turn one is definitely not a struggle, but it's definitely different than you know rolling into turn three.
Mm-hmm.
And even exit of turn two is way different than the exit of turn four. So
yeah,
it's definitely, you know, somebody that's going to be out there and consistent and not overdrive the truck, you know, is one that you're going to see up the front.
Now, do you find the high line or the low line or the middle line better? And does it change during the race for you?
You may see me down at the bottom at the beginning and I do tend to chase the groove up the track. So, mm-hmm. even this past weekend, you know, I was down at the bottom and then, you know, I found more speed up in the middle lane of one and two. You know, if there's a wall riding track, I'm on it. I love riding a wall.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I can get it to work and stick, you'll probably see me up at the top. But, you know, I tend to see and feel what that track's doing and, you know, see where it's faster and where it's a little more racier. But, you know, I have seen both strategies work there. So we'll see what the track's like, you know, come Friday and, you know, see which lane is the better of the two.
Cool. Did you happen to catch any of the Cup car race yesterday at Homestead with Kyle Larson riding the wall literally 3 or 4 inches off the wall?
Yeah, I did, man.
That was insane.
That's one of my favorites to watch.
Yeah, that's a good track. And it seemed to work for him for quite a while there.
It did. Until he got the barrels there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he also he tapped Blaney right before then too, because I guess Blaney slowed down pretty quick going into the pits there.
Yeah, he did, and that's a very a pretty, you know, close controversy between a Blaney fan and a Kyle Larson fan right now. So
yep,
you know, I got to say I'm on the Blaney train, so I don't know.
Yeah, I like Blaney.
I don't rounds with Anthony. Yeah.
Blaney seems like to be a good guy. He's a good guy. Larson's not a bad guy either, but Blaney would be the guy I'd want to have a beer with at a race.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Being that you got to watch tires Kentucky on Friday night and they start to wear out, which turn gives you the most agita, 2 or 4?
4.
Yes.
I struggle with 4 with a worn set of tires.
I struggle with this with a new set of tires. It's something about coming out of 4. It's just, it reminds me of a couple other tracks like that where you come out of 4, Michigan, and you can just fly and slide like crazy. Plus, I find pit road at Kentucky can be a little troublesome.
Yeah, it can be. You know, like I said, man, somebody that's going to be consistent and understands tire wear and knows where to, you know, where to back their corner up a little more to get that good exit is definitely somebody that's going to come victorious at the end of Kentucky. It's definitely one of those tricky mile and a half.
Yeah, expecting a clean race or a lot of yellows for all 3 series this weekend?
Hey, I'd love a clean race this weekend. Yeah. Expect a clean race every weekend. So,
sure.
You know, I hope we can make it happen. And you know, the biggest thing, you know, is give and take, and
yep,
and understanding where you can take and are comfortable taking, and you know, understanding when it's time to give somebody this position.
Exactly.
You know? So.
Well,
that's what it's about.
Well, I certainly hope to run clean on Sunday because I got the red flag watch for being 4/1000ths over on the incident report today. 0.124.
Yeah, it'll get you, Greg, every once in a while. You know,
it will.
Every one of us here has been on it. you know, shamefully, yep, myself has been on it. So, you know, it tends to work itself out once you understand what it's there for.
Oh, and, sure. No, I get
it. And you get yourself off of it and maintain to be off of it. You'll understand. Yeah, this is a good system.
Oh yeah. No, it definitely is. I was just going to bust your chops for 4/1000ths of a point. I mean, come on. I had Sunday night. I had such a clean race last night up until lap 58 when the 4 and I got into it coming out of turn 2. They called it a racing incident, which it definitely was. I was coming up, he was going down. And I'm like, all right, I'm not going to get my extra 5 points for a clean race. But then the rest of the incidents, it was collateral damage. And I'm like, ugh, that's going to hurt. But I get it. I just had to bust your chops on it a little bit.
For sure. All good.
All right. Well, good luck Friday night at Kentucky. And congratulations on your win this past Friday night at Auto Club. We'll see you Friday on the broadcast.
Yeah, thanks, Greg.
Alrighty. So let's take a look at truck points after week 3, after Auto Club is in the history books, and we're heading to Kentucky on the 27th. In first place is Ryan Latshaw with 78 points. This is really tight after 2 weeks, as it should be, but this is really tight all the way through the top 10, only 16 points separating everybody. In P2, Albert Williams has 77 points. Bryce Mettings, our buddy from down under, he's in P3 with 76 points. Eric Thaler has 74 points. He's in P4. Brandon Morris right behind him at 73 points in P5. Sean Hapik has 71 points in P6. Craig Hawkins, P7 with 70 points. Dustin Reinstedtl is in P8 with 67. Tie for 9 with Mark Conkren and Brandon Hinton, both with 66. And rounding out the top 10 in P10 is Mike Todd Jr. with 62 points. Next race is Kentucky. It will be Friday night. We go green at about 10 p.m. Eastern time. And you can watch that race live on Twitch at twitch.tv/Rivenvale. And James Johnson and I will be in the booth calling the race and having a good time. And I'll be watching to see how everybody drives and trying to pick up some pointers for Sunday's race. Cool Down Lap Xfinity's series review. The next race is October 21st. That'll be at Indianapolis. And the winner this week was Dustin Reinstedtl. And let's check out the Xfinity points after week two. Next race is at Iowa, I believe. And in first place is Dustin Reinstedtl with 90 points. Second place is Jason Huffman with 85 points. Third place is Michael Simia. He's on the Joe Sixpack Racing team with me in the Cup Series. He's a part-time driver there. He has 80 points in P3. Colin Huffman, too, has 79 points in P4. Just a couple points behind him is John Bates with 77 at P5. P6 is Drew Alvarez with 75 points. Tie for 7th with Clarence Princh and Garrett Reed, both at 63 points. And rounding out the top 10, not too far off the pace in P9 is William Callis with 68 points. And 10th place is Andrew Miller with 66 points. Cup review from Auto Club this week. The winner was Justin Thaler, and crazy finish at that race. I was almost up at the top with just a few laps to go. I think I was in P7 or P6 and then got some collateral damage and got the iRacing menace that every time you just tap the wall, you've got wheel damage, which sometimes doesn't mean anything. But usually when I get it, it means I got to crawl back into the pits. So ended up cruising around the lower apron there at the close of the race just to be able to finish the race. And I think I finished P12, which that's good enough for me. So congratulations, Justin Thaler, on your win at the Cup Series this week at Auto Club. And the top 10 drivers in the Cup Series, Justin Thaler at first place with 86. And right behind him is Christopher Melton, who also had a good ride last night with 86 points. Eric Thaler is in P3 with 83 points. Peter Dillon is in P4 with 79. John Bates in P5 is tied with Brandon M. Hinton at 70 points each. P7 is Brandon Morris with 68 points. Clarence Prince is in P8 with 67. Norm Snyder, not too far behind him, in P9 at 65. And rounding out the top 10 for the Xfinity Series is Anthony Castor. You've been listening to or watching the Cool Down Lap. This is the official podcast of Midwest Motorsports. It is live on Twitch at twitch.tv/Greg Dreis. Also, we'll be up on YouTube shortly after the race. We just hit a little button. That's one thing I know I can do technically and get it up to YouTube later on tonight. And if time allows, we'll get it up on Anchor, or if not tonight, we'll get it there tomorrow morning. Cool Down Lap is brought to you by the Sim Racing Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Dreis. Want to let you know about Track Racer. Track Racer has an affiliate program with Midwest Motorsports, where if you like Track Racer equipment, which is darn good equipment, and you buy it, make sure you have the code or find out what you have to do when you hit the checkout there, because for every sale that's made using the Midwest Motorsports affiliate link, the league gets a small commission, which goes to help offset the cost of broadcasting and putting everything together. So we'll be back on Monday night next week with another edition of the Cool Down Lap. Tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern time, if you want to find about another league that has some good stuff going on, you can log in and listen live right here as the Sim Racing Podcast hosts the Burn'em Down Podcast for the Rolling Thunder Racing Series. Rolling Thunder Racing Series podcast, the Burn'em Down Podcast, tomorrow night, 8 p.m., same channel, bat channel, same racing time. So until then, stay in your lane.